When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Okay. Did you get the wire out? The red wire. No, the red one. Show me the red wire. The red one. Yes, good. Now, you're going to plug that red wire where the blue wire goes in the board. Put the red wire where the blue wire goes in the board, okay? But don't let them touch. See where you took the blue one off? Yes. Now put the red one. No, don't put the blue one back. Put the red one where the blue one was. And put the blue one where the red one was. But be careful. They're oppositely charged, so keep them away from each other. Make sure you hold them apart from... No, hold them apart. Are you okay? Well, it was worth a shot.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Richard.
And this is House Podcastica, the Mandalorian edition.
Woo! This week we're covering The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 4, Chapter 12, The Siege.
Nice work. So, as you may have noticed, Jason is off this week, taking a little break. But joining us in his chair is a guest we had on last season for one episode as well. I think that was episode 7. It's Eric. Eric is back. Eric, thank you for joining us.
No worries. Thank you, guys. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, man.
Awesome.
I think we had a fun time last year when we did this, and I think,
absolutely.
I think today is going to be just the same.
Woo-woo.
So we have lots to cover, of course, on the program today. But the first thing we do is our Star Wars question of the week. And this week, the question is, which Star Wars character do you think is the most formidable or lethal? And try to explain. So, Rich, who's your most formidable Star Wars character?
I don't like it, but rationally speaking, it's got to be Palpatine.
Palpatine.
Got to be Emperor Palpatine. I mean, the guy can shoot lightning out of his fingers. He can move massive objects around like they're nothing. He coordinated Order 66. I mean, in addition to his, you know, dark Jedi powers, he's also the Emperor. I mean, he wiped out the Jedi almost completely. He threw the Galactic Republic into shambles, and he created an empire. So, I mean,
boom.
Yeah. Rationally speaking, I don't like it, but he's got to be the most lethal, I think.
What about you, Eric?
So I'm going to pull from the Clone Wars, and I've been pretty happy with the Mandalorian series so far, where they've been kind of, pointing reference and pulling things from these other shows that I love. But there was an episode in season 3 of the Clone Wars where Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka, they have to investigate this weird signal, and they come across this family of, like, they're almost like gods, and the guy that they run into is called the Father, and he's basically, him and his family were it's almost like they were the creators of the Force, but they were so powerful. In that episode, Anakin comes up to him and he has his lightsaber and he points it right at his face and he just grabs it with his hand. He says, nope. And then he just pushes it, you know, using the Force just back into its, you know, handle. And he was saying, no, we're not going to do that. And it turns out that they're basically like the balance of the Force, and his children were the good and bad, the Sith and Jedi kind of aspects of the Force. But he seemed mega powerful. He didn't do much fighting, but I don't think he really needed to. So
I mean, if you can grab a lightsaber and push it back in, that's
yeah. It's not, he grabbed it with his hand like it was nothing and just went, yeah, no.
That's
there you go.
I have never even considered that before. Man.
By the way, that episode, the Clone Wars is just so awesome. I highly recommend it to anybody who hasn't seen it. And it, you know, it goes into so much more depth. I think it makes the story of Anakin so much more real. And, yeah. And you kind of see, you know, his change, and especially that whole series. There was, I think, three parts to this series where you see his struggle and his conflict and all that stuff. So much more better than the movies.
Yeah.
But highly recommended.
Yeah, I'm one of the people who hasn't seen that, so it kind of comes up almost every podcast.
Right.
So I should go back and watch it.
Well, there's some elements in this episode too, so I'm gonna point out that as well.
All right, cool. It's definitely a hole in my Star Wars watching, you know, experience. But
yeah,
you know, for me, the most formidable character, Rich, I agree, the Emperor is pretty powerful, but you know, I kind of like Darth Vader in his prime. You know, when he's at the height of his power, which we see a little bit at the end of Rogue One there, right? I think he's pretty strong, pretty powerful. But I also started thinking, the question is funny because the word lethal really makes you think of bad guy. It really implies evil villain. But the word formidable, especially if you think about it as more like impressive, it doesn't necessarily make me think bad guy. So with that in mind, I was like, what about Luke or Yoda? These are really powerful, like light side Jedis. And I mean, you wouldn't want to be on their bad side. They're pretty powerful too. So I think just to mix it up a little bit, I might actually go with Luke Skywalker as the most formidable Star Wars character there is.
Right. I thought about Yoda too, but then I decided to go with body count.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty good.
They're all, you know, anybody that can move things with their minds and they have lightsabers that could cut people in half are all pretty formidable.
Sure. Yeah, I wouldn't want to.
And lethal.
Wouldn't want to get in their way. But body count is a pretty good metric, too, I would say.
That's true. That's true.
All right. Well, that was a great question. I don't know if that came from a listener or not. Jason didn't mention, but if it did, thank you, listener, for that one. So here we are, of course, to talk about The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 4, Chapter 12, The Siege. And this is our top three highlights for it. But first, guys, overall, what did you think of this episode just in general quickly?
I thought it was great. I thought it was refreshing, I guess, is the word to use, to see some familiar faces after the first three episodes where Mando is kind of struggling. You know, it's like everyone's out to get him. So this time around, it was kind of nice and refreshing to see him being welcomed somewhere finally for once.
Yeah, the episode was great. I mean, I feel every episode of this season, every episode of the first season has been just great. They have so many references to the old, old movies, different, you know, shows, Clone Wars, whatnot. The Baby Yoda stuff. It's just, it's hard to knock it. And, you know, even if the episode was average, just being in this whole universe and this series, just, they're just all awesome. I can't say enough about it. I feel, it's awesome. It
feels like they can do no wrong at this point, huh?
Yeah. I mean,
well, it's funny, Rich. I mean, I kind of expect that answer from you all the time because you love them all, which is totally great. And right, I mean, there hasn't been many that I haven't liked either. So I agree with you guys. I really like this one too. I don't know if it actually really was, but it felt sort of heavy on the action side, which was great. You know, lots of good stuff there. It was exciting. It was fun. I think there was plenty of Star Wars nostalgia, which I really, really like, you know, because I'm old enough to feel nostalgic for the original movies and so on. And it was, like you guys said, it was nice to see Greef and Cara Dune again. We haven't seen them in a little while, so great episode.
Right. Yeah,
for sure.
All right, so let's sort of start our top threes here. Eric, why don't you go first with your number three?
For my number three, let's see. My number three is going to be all the silly stuff with Baby Yoda. You know, the opening with the wires was just fun and silly. I know some people might say that it was a little much, but I thought it was fun and silly and light. And then, you know, the wire part, of course, was funny. And then him using the force to steal the macaroon, that was also pretty funny and cute and cool. So that was my three.
Yeah.
Or number three.
I think it's a great choice. I mean, we've talked before on here about the sort of balance between sort of funny kid stuff, you know, but also things that adults can appreciate and a little bit of violence and so on. And the show balances it quite well, even though I feel like lately they've added a little bit more of the sort of cutesy kind of stuff. But the wire scene at the beginning, I thought was hilarious and I loved it.
Yeah.
And my daughter who watches the show, who's 11, I mean, that's what she watches it for.
Yeah.
Right? And that's great. Right. I'm totally, totally fine with that.
My wife is the same. You know, she wants to see the cutesy Baby Yoda stuff. Yep. And, you know, she watches the episode and she enjoys it. And then she waits for me to tell her the significance of all these different characters. And but for the most part, she doesn't know and she doesn't care about that stuff. But she enjoys it. It's still fun.
Yep.
But, you know, she had no idea who, you know, Bo-Katan was or, you know, any of these moments where I go, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And she's like looking at me going, what?
Yeah.
What's the matter
what
with you?
What are you talking about? So was the ending scene where Baby Yoda spit up while Mando was driving away. And it's like Lucy and I cracked up because we're like, oh man, we remember those days.
Oh, totally. I had a kid who used to get car sick sometimes and that happened more than once. Rich, what about you? Number three.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the chase. Yeah. I thought that chase through the canyon was pretty rad, to use an 80s term. Of course, everyone knows at this point, I could watch action all day long. I don't even need a plot. So this was great. Heavy on the action, like Chris said. And it was pretty tense, too. I mean, they really did a good job of throwing a little tension in there. It was a little bit of James Bond kind of, you know, those movies have great car chases. A little bit of Indiana Jones, I thought. And then there's, you know, of course, they were doing the whole trench thing with the canyon. So it reminded me of Luke and Han and all those guys from the original.
Yeah, for sure.
And those types of scenes of shooting at Imperial fighters, you know, it's so ingrained in my psyche because you guys, you know, those Star Wars video games we used to play in the 80s with the little stick figure graphics. And arcades were still a thing. Yeah.
Use the force, Luke.
I'm not sure why either, but it was like so satisfying to hear a speeder bike again. I mean, it hasn't even been that long, but I guess because it was in a new situation rather than Return of the Jedi, it was like, wow, I remember that sound. That's so cool. And to top it off, that whole chase scene, you know, you're like, this is awesome. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. What about Mando? When Mando flew in at the end and saved the day, you know, it's like I was pleasantly surprised because I thought he went off and we were going to get some really bad news about Baby Yoda or something. So that was, you know, after all that tension in the action, it was nice to end on a high note there. I thought that was cool. And add Ace fighter pilot to Mando's skills, for God's sakes.
Oh, man. Yeah, I agree. I loved it. I wanted to talk about the trench run in this episode as well. You know, it's so similar to things we've seen before with Star Wars trench runs. That's definitely a Star Wars thing, obviously. But just, you know, somebody's piloting the ship, of course. Somebody else is operating this pivoting blaster cannon. You know, we've seen that before. TIE fighters are chasing them. And it's just so fun and exciting that I love that as well, right? And like you said, speeder bikes. It's funny, when they first get to the base and they're going in and they go past all those speeder bikes parked there, I'm yeah. like, okay, they've got to use those. I mean, they can't just show us those and not use them later. It's like Chekhov's speeder bike, right? If you show it, you got to use it later. So I'm right. glad they did. And yeah, it was an amazing scene. And speaking of the sort of dogfight with Mandalorian at the end there, when he flies in to save the day, I feel like that was even similar, you know, to Han saving the day when Luke is trying to destroy the first Death Star. So
yeah,
it's all really, I mean, I don't want to say derivative, but derivative of itself, its own property. And I thought it was amazing because I'm just totally in board for that. But Mando can really fly that thing, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't totally see him do that kind of thing that often. It's mostly just going from place to place. So
right.
I was really into it.
I'm happy
full,
about
he's
that.
He's a full package.
Now he doesn't, you know, I mean, that kind of solidifies that we're not going to lose the Razor Crest. I mean, he loves that ship, right?
Oh, totally. I watched that. I was so excited about it. I put in my order for Lego Razor Crest just today.
All right. Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. It's awesome. It's unfortunately it's back ordered, so it's going to take like a month to get here, but
dope.
You know, it'll be just in time for Christmas, maybe.
It's probably good you did that then. Right after they go to back order, they usually run out.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I don't want to miss it. The other thing, too, is when he does that move where he kind of shuts off the engine and the ship just sort of hangs there in midair for a second and then he turns, you know, kicks into them again. I love that kind of thing. And that reminded me of, I think Rey did something similar in the Millennium Falcon when she first flies it in The Force Awakens.
Oh, remember? I think you're right.
Sort of swings it around. So what a cool scene. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, not only was it a cool scene, but just the specific shots, you know, seeing the TIE fighter pilot, you know, dialing in the you know, his sights. It's almost identical to the, you know, the dogfights that were happening in Star Wars, and pretty much anytime somebody's in the TIE fighter, and it just, you know, points back to the old, you know, movies and just gives you that nice, cool feeling.
Yeah. They had some good perspectives in this show, in this particular episode. Remember when they were about ready to, or they were trying to open the door to the base, and then Mando's like, stay here, and he takes off with his jetpack, and you get that perspective from the ground of him flying up to the landing, and I was like, oh, that is a cool scene.
Oh, yeah. That's actually kind of what I wanted to start with on my number three, too, is the way that this episode didn't stay with Mando the whole time, which I think is kind of new for this show too. You know, he's in almost every scene, but here I noticed that when he flies up to take out those stormtroopers at the top, when they can't get the door open, and we stay down there with Kara and Greef and what's his face? The other dude, forget his name.
Mithril.
Yeah, that's right. And then later, of course, he jetpacks off to get the kid, and our entire trench run is just the other guys. And I'm like, that's really interesting. You know, usually they wouldn't have Mando leave for so long. He's off doing something else and we're staying with these characters. And I know we know these characters, we've seen them before, but I was kind of wondering if they're trying to branch out a little bit and give us some more time with some of the other characters besides the Mandalorians. So I just thought that was interesting for this episode and something that I hadn't really noticed in other ones.
I agree. I got a little bit anxious, felt a little anxiety when Amanda was gone. It's like, no, where'd he go? Oh, no, something terrible is going to happen. But
if he's not here, something terrible must be happening. Yeah.
Right.
It's always a good thing, I think, when they're able to expand on, you know, some of these side characters. I mean, both Greef and Kara are both really cool, and getting to see them in action and kick butt and, you know, do all their fun stuff is definitely a good thing.
Oh yeah.
I wonder too, though, remember Jason was saying that there were rumors of issues on set with Pedro, and he had to walk off the set and cool down or something, so they're like, hey, we'll just shoot without him.
I don't know. I mean, I hope not, obviously, right? But and I also feel like that's a pretty big long scene to at the last minute do without him, right? If he just had to go and disappear for a while, but you never know. I mean, if the problems were, sort of identified in season one, maybe they write these scenes like this to give him a break. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you guys talked, or maybe you talked about it in the last episode, but, you know, him finding out that he is in this different sect, you know, might allow him to take his helmet off. And I think that was, or at least what I read, was part of the beef that Pedro had, was that he wanted to see his face more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he aligns with her, maybe we will start seeing his helmet off.
Yeah. Right. Well, we saw his chin this episode, right? When he was drinking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess we don't even know if it's really his chin or not, but it's
the helmet. I liked how Baby Yoda, too, was like trying to catch a peek.
Yeah.
You're like,
funny.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Eric, what else have you got? Number two.
Let's see, number two. It was basically the just the whole battle, you know, them going to that facility. It was so, you know, reminiscent of the, you know, of Star Wars and them, you know, breaking into the base. Just little things, you know, using the TK, you know, TK. What was it, 187 or something like that? I think I messed up that number.
Original was, I think, TK-421.
Yeah, that was TK-421. Yeah. And I ended up looking up what that meant. And there's all kinds of theories around what the TK could mean. And a lot of it ties in with when George Lucas was writing it and he was trying to make the stormtroopers and the Empire likened to, you know, World War II in Germany or World War I and the stormtroopers and all that kind of stuff. But I liked it because it, again, kind of ties into the old series. And who knows, maybe TK meant they were part of a specific legion. And then that would mean that there were some, you know, some TK stormtroopers on the Death Star, and now they're here. And again, it's just tying the whole series together even more with just little, you know, with just these little things.
Do you know how many stormtroopers there are, Eric?
No. Well, I mean, is it stormtroopers? I mean, you can go back to in Solo, you know, you got to see, you know, these troops that weren't actually fully armored, you know, and they were using those guys as infantrymen, and supposedly, you know, stormtroopers are supposed to be elite.
Yeah.
And another one of these rumors, and I find that funny because they're such horrible shots, but there was another not rumor but another theory that TK meant this form of martial art that they were all trained in. And that was another theory of where the TK came from.
Huh.
And I'm kind of branching off from the actual attack. But what did I read? I thought I read somewhere that there was potentially like 13,000 troops in. I don't know if it was in like the 501st TK. You know, if that's what it was, but it seems like there has to be more than that.
Right.
I guess bottom line is I don't know.
I always thought TK-421 was just sort of a division of stormtroopers, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, that was also another theory too. I mean, there was a handful of them, and that none of them had been tied down, and I don't even think they've really mentioned any of that in any of the any of the movies or canon for that matter. It was just a little side note, and it's just another one of those little things that keep tying into the rest of the series. It just makes it so cool.
Right.
Like, but just seeing them all run through and kick butt and, you know, take down Stone. I could, again, like Rich, I could watch a whole movie of that with zero plot, you know, just have Mando blasting people and flying around on his jetpack.
Running around being a badass.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I hear you too. I mean, it's so fun to watch them do that kind of stuff. And, you know, we get a lot of it. This episode was another, you know, sort of following the formula, of course, that we've seen all this season, where he shows up somewhere, he needs something. In this case, it's his ship repaired, and he encounters some people, and they're like, "Yeah, we can do that for you, but while we're waiting, let's go do this.
We need you to kick some butt.
Yeah, we need you to help us kick some ass." So, you're right. The whole infiltration of the place was amazing. It's just fun to watch them be so good at their job, which sounds funny to say, but like so competent and so incredible. And, you know, they just get in and out and do what they need to do. And then the whole place is destroyed, right? In the name of, in the name of, liberating this planet from the Empire.
Right.
Absolutely.
And on top of the TK thing, I mean, there were so many other little things, like, you know, when, again, I can't remember his name, when he overloaded the system, it was very similar to Obi-Wan shutting the deflector shield off, and just, I don't know, everything, you know, it's just all these little things just make it so cool.
My favorite part about that scene where he has to walk out onto that little ledge to shut it off is he says, "There's no guardrail on this." And like, he's saying what every Star Wars fan has been thinking for years, because there's never any guardrails anywhere.
They're not big on safety or security, are they?
No, there's no, you know, professional safety board in the Star Wars universe, clearly. I thought that was hilarious. Anything else about the sort of infiltration of this place? I agree, it was amazing.
I mean, I could probably go on a lot more, but it was just that whole scene is them getting there and getting in, and the speeder bikes and the chase and the trench, you know, all of it was just so fun to watch.
Cool.
You know? And it was, really cool.
Awesome. Rich, what about you next on the list?
You know, I realized this time around that so far each episode in season two has started with and ended with the Razor Crest. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that because, number one, it feels like we're, you know, like someone had mentioned just earlier, we're on a journey with Mando, right? And it gives us time to like anticipate, okay, what's this next adventure going to be at the beginning, you know, when we see him in his ship, you know, picking up for where we left off the previous episode. And then number two, it's cool because I like vehicles. Yeah. I love vehicles. I love cars, bikes, trains, planes, spaceships, you know, you name it, motorcycles. I've been putting together plastic models and Legos of vehicles from all popular science fiction since I was like 10 years old. So I dig this stuff, and I didn't really realize it until this episode. You know, this episode had a land speeder that we first saw in the original movie. It had a Trexler Marauder, which is pretty cool. It's like it was that ship that Kara got into to make her big escape.
Had you seen that vehicle before? 'Cause that one I think was new to me.
Yeah, it's no. Yeah, I looked it up.
I think it's new.
Yeah, it's like an armored, weaponized version of a troop carrier.
Okay,
they had that toy. I think they used that in the episode with Moff Gideon when he attacked, and they had that thing come in with the troops.
Oh,
I had that toy as a kid, and I loved it. I would put my little stormtroopers in it and drive it around.
You still got it?
Unfortunately, no.
Bummer.
I had so many of those toys that I look back and go, what did I do? But I played with them.
I played with them hard.
Yeah. I painted them. I burned them. I did all kinds of stuff with them.
Put them in the bath, like everywhere.
Probably. Yep.
I left that part out.
I took a Luke Skywalker figure and I hacked off his arm, and I got some of my mom's fingernail polish and painted it all bloody.
Right.
And I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff with my toys.
Amazing.
That's what I used to do when I was like 12 years old. I'd spend hours and meticulously putting together a model so that I could go outside and put a firecracker in it. That's but awesome. Yeah, this episode, all kinds of vehicles, the land speeder, the speeder bikes, the Trexler Marauder, the TIE Fighters, the Razor Crest. You know, I mean, if you just gave me a list of the vehicles that are going to be in a show, I'm automatically going to be like, oh, this is going to be a good episode.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, I looked it up. The Trexler Marauder, it's a type of repulsor craft, which is the word they use in the Star Wars universe, being that it floats. The repulsor craft that's similar to the K-79S-80 Imperial troop transport and was used by the Imperial Remnants, led by Moff Gideon. So that was the most recent entry in Wikipedia. A repulsor lift is a technology in Star Wars that allows a craft to hover or even just fly over a planet's surface by pushing against its gravity. You know, we would call it, you know, other shows call it anti-gravity and whatnot. But it's pretty cool because when you're doing that, when you make a vehicle effectively weightless, then you don't need a whole lot of energy or thrust to get the craft to move. So, you know, that's pretty cool. That's how they can go so fast with such little vehicles.
What about the Star Destroyer-ish vehicle that we see at the end where Gideon is on? It's, I think it's called an Arquitans class command cruiser. What'd you think of that one?
Yeah, that one was awesome. At first, you're seeing it like you're, oh my God, does he got himself a Star Destroyer? And then you're like, oh no, it's like a version of one.
They've used that that ship in Star Wars Rebels, which is another series I recommend.
Yeah, that's cool. I thought it was fun. And the way they introduce it in this episode too, with it passing over the camera, which of course we've seen.
Right.
The Star Destroyers is a very Star Wars-y thing, but that looks like a fun ship and also pretty powerful. So this fleet he has, not something to be taken lightly, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, what did the rebel say? The pilot, was he a pilot or a captain from the rebels was saying, you know, there's something going on out here.
Oh yeah,
he was that pilot that, you know, the patrolling the outer rim.
Yes, yeah, that's
so
right.
They're kind of onto it, I think. So they know something's going on.
Yeah,
we caught them. Was it episode 2 or 3 that they were running guns, and now we got this going on.
Yeah, I was glad to see that X-Wing pilot again, right? He's Captain Carson Teva, and yeah, he comes in at the end and has that quick chat with Greef, which I thought was funny, and Greef's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. There was no Razor Crest here.
Right.
And then he tries to recruit Cara Dune right into the New Republic, and and she reveals that she's from Alderaan, and of course everyone knows what that means, and that came up. Of course, she lost everybody, so I was nice to see him again, and it was a little character moment for her, I think.
For sure, yeah. No, finding out that it explains a lot.
Yeah, totally. Right. But she also has no interest of rejoining, it looks like. Which doesn't surprise me, really.
Yeah.
All right. My next item here, I mean, this is probably a big one. We should talk about what Moff Gideon is doing and what we learned in this episode about sort of his plan. So, you know, the first thing I want to bring up here is that right at the end there, we get that scene with him and we find out that they've installed a tracking device on the Razor Crest. So now Gideon is tracking him and I guess knows where he will be going and where he is. And he mentions that they're looking for the asset, which of course is Baby Yoda. But earlier in the episode, when they're infiltrating that base, they discover that it's a research station. And from what I understand, Moff Gideon is trying to sort of reverse engineer force sensitivity into people by using Baby Yoda's blood. But they've run out of the blood, which is why they want to get him back again. And I guess he's trying to create some sort of army of soldiers that are force sensitive. And that's what we see at the very end in the final scene there, as he's sort of standing in that hall with the soldiers lining the walls there. And they're in some kind of stasis, according to Wikipedia anyways. So that really opens up a lot or provides a lot of information about what he's doing and really gives us, I think, kind of a roadmap for the rest of this season in a way, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're setting up the bad guys. And to me, they looked like dark troopers.
Yeah.
On top of watching all things Star Wars, I also am an avid video game player, and they've had dark troopers in a couple of the iterations of games that have come out, specifically in Battlefront 2, the older version. They have a new version now, but the older version had a dark trooper that had the dark armor and the kind of the flattened stormtrooper helmet, and they have always been kind of badass. And we've seen these other iterations of stormtroopers that wear black, and they always seem to be pretty tough and formidable and whatnot. So
yeah. So is a dark trooper a trooper in armor, or is it a robot? I thought it was a robot.
So again, they've used that term. So in Star Wars Rebels, they had this group of dark troopers, and they were there was some sort of humanoid person in them. They weren't robotic. They were just like elite. But then in the, so I also play the new Battlefront 2, where they have hinted at adding dark troopers. And in that game, they haven't added them yet. It's been hinted, but they're going to be robotic, that they're going to be like the Sentinel type robots that we've seen in Clone Wars and, in some of the other movies.
Right.
I guess this show, I mean, they can sort of do their own take on it anyways, probably.
Yeah, exactly, if they want to.
Yeah. My feeling is those are the, they're not robots. They're humans or organisms or in there.
Right.
And they're trying to, and he's trying to, give them the ability to use the force by kind of taking the blood from Baby Yoda.
Right.
And create these things. So, I mean, that's why he's chasing him down, but that's pretty interesting, to see that it's just another, obviously we've had clones in Star Wars. They've created armies in different ways. And here's another approach to it, I guess, that Gideon is trying to take.
Yeah.
I was a little, I don't know if annoyed is the right word, but I never liked the whole metachlorine reference and
we're not supposed to say that word on this show.
Oh, really? Okay, sorry. But it was funny how they said it, the M count.
Yep.
Right.
I kind of like that better, that they were kind of brushing over it, but at the same time, I mean, I like the idea of them kind of using the blood to do something to enhance troopers or to enhance Moff himself. I think that's cool, but metachlorines, man, you got to get away from
that. I know. I totally agree with you. I like the idea here. Like this is a cool idea, but they don't need to talk about metachlorines, and M count was a good way to gloss over it. I fully agree with that. It sort of like acknowledges that there's something special about this creature's blood that's going to let them do what they want to do, but
right.
Let's not explain it too much.
That's how it should have been from the beginning, right?
It should have been.
I wonder if the showrunners felt the same way. Like, we shouldn't say that word.
I bet they do. Yeah, it's banned from the set and the script. The other thing, though, that and it's just a little thing, but when they realize that message, right, that they receive when they're in the base. Or that they see is only 3 days old, Mando realizes that Moff Gideon is still alive. And I never really thought about the fact that he would have assumed he's dead because he blew up his TIE fighter at the end of season one and it crashed and he never really saw him escape. So he's been going around this whole time thinking that they're relatively safe from him because he's dead. And, that's why he just gets out of there as fast as he can, because he realizes Baby Yoda is probably in more danger just by leaving them somewhere unattended.
Right.
Anyways, but I thought that's cool because now Mando knows that he is, more actively being pursued by these really nasty bad guys.
Totally. And he probably feels something's up, just like the New Republic does, because in all of these episodes, maybe not the first one, but the last few episodes, the New Republic and the Empire has been in the background the whole time, If not directly, indirectly.
Right. Yeah, they're in the background, and they're also both kind of after him. So he's got a lot of people coming for him.
Right.
Yeah, I think that will definitely change the, you know, the future episodes, because he's going to have to, you know, he's going to have to be on his A game constantly. There's no, there's not to be any time to rest and stop if he knows that these guys are as close as they are.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, his mission was to get Baby Yoda back to his people, back to the Jedi. But it's going to get a lot tougher, I think, as we get through the second half of this season. Anyways, it was cool, I thought, to see Gideon again and just get all this info out in front of us, you know, so we kind of know what's going on. It was all very mysterious before now, but pretty good. All right, who's next? Eric, I think you're next with number one.
With my number one, you know, you kind of mentioned it. It was the whole Moff thing and seeing the black armor and trying to figure out what his plan was with those, and seeing that he has a plan. And it's just one of those things where, you know, having a good bad guy in any, you know, movie or show is always, you know, it just enhances the whole series. And I can't wait for, you know, for them to face off. And yeah, it was just that moment, you know, seeing him there and knowing that he's preparing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something.
And he's not to be taken lightly, and that, He's
something huge is coming. I mean, he's such a great villain. And Giancarlo Esposito, you know, is amazing. So it's, the more I think about it and the more I see him on screen, and we haven't really had much of him on screen yet, only a few scenes, right? But he's always so great. And I hope there's some huge showdown, you know, it's going to be awesome.
There has to be. Yeah, there has to be.
They got
to
get the black saber from him. It was gonna be.
Yeah,
that's right. Yep. That's right. So let me ask you guys a question. The dark saber there. Do you think Moff Gideon may be trying to, you know, make himself more force sensitive or something, so he can use the saber more effectively?
That's what I thought. That's my first thought, was that he wants to be Vader, or he wants to be a Jedi, and you know, he might have the intelligence and the armor and the weapon, but he just doesn't have the, you know, the force aspect of it.
Right.
That's what I took from it.
Right. Well,
I'm going to go the opposite direction. I don't think so.
No.
Oh.
No, I think he just kind of came across it in his efforts, because I think he's been tasked with, well, do you mind if I get into my number one?
No, go for it.
So, you know, as we already mentioned, they're cloning bodies and injecting them with the kid's blood. And so I have a little different take on it. I think they're trying to make either Snoke, or they're trying to make Palpatine, make a body for one of those two. And I think that Moff Gideon has been tasked with this. He's tasked with bringing back Palpatine. That's what I think. I'm going to go with Palpatine. I don't know about Snoke. So, you know, he's on this mission to do this, and he's going around plundering worlds and getting what he needs to make all this happen. And I think he just probably ran across the black saber and took it while he had it.
Because why not?
And meanwhile, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, the Republic feels, you know, the New Republic's now getting into it. You got the core worlds; they don't really believe anything. You got the Outer Rim, so it's like they're really starting to get into the events that lead up to the last, you know, the next three movies. And it'll be interesting to see how they wrap all this up and hash it out, because we already know what the end result is.
True.
So it kind of makes sense on how, you know, to me, on how they're going with this series now. So in that respect, this show was pretty cool in that it really kind of gave us a direction that we're heading in now.
Yeah.
Because at first, when we in the cold opening, you know, it's like, well, I kind of thought, oh, what are they doing? You know, I thought he was going to go see the Jedi.
Right,
Osaka Tono. What's her name?
Ashoka.
Ashoka Tono.
Or
Tono.
Yeah.
Asana Taco, I think is what it was.
Asana Taco.
Yeah. Asana Taco. Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, the whole opening, he's like, oh, we got to go get repairs. 180. And I was like, oh, they're just delaying it. No. But then, you know, they brought out all this stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah. Well, this has gotten much more interesting.
Totally. But you know what? I mean, just on that note, I think it was completely worth it just to see the Razor Crest all shiny and new again and able to fly like crazy. So I was okay with that. But I was going to say before, there is tons of speculation out there that this, what we're seeing here, is the beginning of whatever the program is that ended up creating Supreme Leader Snoke, as you mentioned, right? Because my understanding is he was sort of engineered or built or created on Exegol by the Emperor. So I don't know if they're trying to create the Emperor, but you could be right, like a body for the Emperor. I don't know, but I feel like Snoke might be a little bit more likely, but that would make sense too. He came from somewhere and
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you can't say cloning in this and not tie it to any of the other stuff, any of the other movies, because it's been such a big part.
Yeah.
I always assumed Snoke was like a failed first attempt. That's why he looked the way he did. And then they did what they needed to do to get a body for the Emperor.
Well, maybe we saw the failed first attempt.
Yeah, I haven't really done much reading or research on it, but
that's right.
No. I mean, in what we saw with all those dead bodies floating in there, that was the failed first attempt.
In those tanks, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I like how it seems to be filling in the gaps, though, right? That's amongst other things, that's one of the perfect roles for this show. Just show us how we got from, Jedi to Force Awakens. So pretty good. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
All right. Usually Jason does a kind of a segment on lore and Star Wars stuff that comes out of the episode. And there was plenty of it, but I thought we could focus on one thing here that may have revealed a little bit of information to us. And that's the classroom scene. So he sent me a transcript of what the protocol droid there was teaching these kids. And I'll read it here. Here's the lesson that the droid was giving while Baby Yoda was stealing the cookies. The droid says, "Transported from the outer rim to as far away as the core worlds. However, there are several other regions within our galaxy. They are the mid-rim, the expansion region, the inner rim, the colonies, core, and deep core. All right, class, settle down. Back to the lesson, shall we? The capital of the Old Republic was within the core on a planet called Coruscant. The capital of the New Republic is currently on the planet Chandrila, which is also within the core region. So, back to the start. The system also contains the Akadiz Maelstrom. The Maelstrom surrounds Kessel and its three moons. As you learned yesterday, there are many systems in that galaxy. How many orbits are there in the Kessel system? Do we at least remember that?" And then some kid in the class goes, "Oh, I know, two?" And the droid says, "Yes, very good. As the third moon of Kessel rotates the outer planet, you see the moon here travels in its same orbit. Now, who can track the path of the orbit here? Do I have any volunteers? Anyone?" So, it's just a fun little lesson there on the makeup, I guess, of the Star Wars galaxy and the different regions and where the capital is. And had you guys heard of the planet Chandrila? I don't even know if I'm saying that exactly right, but is that a new one to you guys?
I have not heard of it.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one. I mean, I think we've all kind of heard of, or we've obviously heard of Kessel Run and, the route that Han Solo took in the first movie.
Yep.
The Maelstrom, I know, was mentioned in Solo.
Right.
And, that other capital planet, no, I haven't heard of that one. I'm assuming that it has been mentioned somewhere else, but I have not.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't know it either, but I mean, it's in the core worlds. It is the new capital. I think it's just a neat little expansion on, the Star Wars universe that the show is giving us here. And of course, the Maelstrom, we saw in Solo when they flew through it, right? They basically went through it. That's how they did the Kessel Run in such a short time. They took the shortcut. So fun callbacks and references to other Star Wars stuff.
I wonder if droid would make a good teacher in real life.
I don't know.
Those kids were pretty well behaved.
They were, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe the 3PO unit has like one of those little shocking things that R2 has. So if they, get out of line, he can just open up his finger and give them a little.
Right.
Get back in your seat.
He can berate them in 30 million different languages.
Oh, that's right.
That's a bonus, being able to talk to them in any language. Yeah.
Actually, speaking of that, I wanted to mention that during that scene when they, first got to the Imperial complex, Kara calls, what is that guy's name that we keep forgetting?
Mithral.
Mithral.
Yep. Oh, Mithral. Yeah.
She uses a cuss word.
Oh, yeah?
It's a supposed cuss word. I should have written it down.
She says Dank Ferrick, right? Which is exactly. We've heard a few times on the show. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Exactly.
It's I don't know what the equivalent in English would be, but it's pretty common swear word in Star Wars.
Right. Exactly. I mean, what made me think of it was the 3PO unit and the Ichuta from Empire Strikes Back. How rude.
That's right.
Dank Ferrick, every time I hear that, I just substitute, son of a bitch.
Right, exactly.
that seems to be the same sentiment, I would say.
Right.
For sure. All right. Anyways, I thought it was just sort of a fun little scene while we saw Baby Yoda stealing the cookies to just listen into what the lesson was actually going on. We haven't seen a lot of school lessons in the Star Wars universe. At least I haven't.
Yeah, no, that was cool.
It was fun. All right. Any extra notes, guys, before we move on about this episode that you wanted to just mention?
One little thing. I looked at some of the Easter eggs. I mean, granted, I had to, most of them I think I found, but there were a few that I had missed and had to kind of go back. I don't know if you guys saw it, but when they were walking into the classroom, in the background, you could see a big statue of the IG unit that I'm assuming was the IG unit that had taken care of Baby Yoda from, those episodes there. But there was a big monument to him in the background.
Oh, cool.
Oh, is that right?
I did not notice that. That was IG 11.
Yeah. So you have to go back and look, and he's standing there with his arm up, and it's this big little monument thing. And it was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, that is cool.
I'm glad he got
he helped save the town.
I'm glad he got the respect he deserves, because that's right.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought that was fun.
Sacrificed. So, yeah.
And then one other little Easter egg. I don't know if you read about it, but a production assistant or somebody got left in the scene.
Yeah.
And they're in the complex and Grief and Kara and Mando are running around the corner. And if you look just to the, the far left of the screen, you can see some dude's leg and arm with his jeans and a watch kind of in the background.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's there. Eric, you've spoiled our news segment because we're going to talk about
no.
that. There. Totally fine.
I'm sorry.
No big deal at all. No big deal at all.
I'm sorry.
It's funny. It was a funny scene. Yeah. From The Verge, they reported on it. You're right. It's as they come around the corner. It's about the time code I have here is 1854 into the episode. You can freeze it and you can see this guy standing there. Not all of them, but he's just standing T-shirt, jeans, a watch on his wrist. And he's just trying to hide. And then when it cuts away and cuts back, he's gone. So it's funny.
I just thought it was a cool thing. I paused it myself and I saw it and I called the kids in and I'm like, look.
So you just noticed it. You didn't have to find that online. I didn't see it at all. I watched it 2.5 times. So
it happened so quick that I was like, wait, what was that? And I had to go back and pause it. And Lori kept saying, what are you looking at? I'm like, just wait. I think I saw something. And then I paused it and I saw it there. I mean, I went back and looked and I saw that they had found it online and all that. But
that's really funny.
I thought it was fun.
Jason made a note when he sent me these. He said, I wouldn't be too surprised if Disney removes it from the episode soon if they haven't already. So I wonder if they'll go back and make a quick edit
and re-edit.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking. I was like, that's pretty rare for Disney to leave a mistake in there.
I mean,
it happened so fast though. I mean, it was so quick.
It really was. I mean, you wouldn't think they would miss this kind of thing, but it can happen. And he's pretty dark, in the back corner. And, if they were just trying to finish the episode, maybe it would have taken too long to sort of remove him digitally or whatever. So I don't know. But
I don't know if this was a factor, but I think, Carl Weathers directed this, right?
That's right.
He directed this episode and he was in that scene. So maybe, and the dude was behind him. I don't know if that would have anything, to do with it.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
But
I don't know.
He was in that same scene. So I don't know.
Funny little Easter egg. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Rich, any notes from you?
So Baby Yoda must be developing very slowly, because what, he's 50 years old and he still doesn't know red from blue? Come
on. You know.
You know, when Grief picks him up, did he actually say a word? Yeah, because
he said yes.
Did he, or was it just a coup?
I don't think so. I think he was just pulling Mando's leg.
Right.
I think
right.
so. I don't think it was an actual word. He just made a noise. He kind of responded, but just made a noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Mando, he seems a lot more comfortable talking to the kid now. He used to just, you know, yell at him and tell him to stop or don't do that.
Right.
Yeah. Put that down. Now he's like just having conversations with him. So that was pretty neat to see.
Yeah. He's being a better like caregiver or, you know, a parent, whatever. He's getting used to the idea.
And, you know, they're doing that on purpose so that when they have to split up or something, it's going to be heartbreaking.
Oh, my God. You're so right.
I also had a note here on Cara Dune. Man, she was out for justice. She's huge. You see her compared to her male counterparts on there?
Yeah, she is. She is a pretty hefty girl.
She is dominating.
Formidable character, you know.
For sure.
Maybe she's the one.
Right. I think we may even have talked about it on the last episode I was on, but I like seeing her, and I like the fact that she was an MMA girl and when she does these stunts in the beginning with the Aqualish guys, that she really can do that. You know,
I know.
Some of these actors who, you know, might think that they are tough. She is the real deal.
Oh, yeah. I bet you she does most of her own stunts.
Yeah, I would doubt it for sure.
You've gotten buff too. I thought it was funny, the Mithril, the blue guy, yep. When he first saw Mando walk in the door, he like shit his pants.
Yeah, that was funny.
It was pretty good.
Out of his neck.
And then Mando says the same. He says, you know, if he ever runs off again, just let me know.
Right.
That was good.
And then the last note I had was, I kind of felt bad for the troopers. I mean, they take a lot of shit. You know, they're not good at their jobs. They can't aim worth a damn. They don't seem too bright. And then when they finally, after 1,000 shots, get a hit on Mando, his armor just denies them.
Right. No, like, it just bounces right off.
Yeah.
It's like, how demoralizing if you were a stormtrooper. Poor guys.
Poor guys. Don't feel too bad for them. Well, a couple of notes that I have is, you know, Grief at the beginning, I think he mentions that he thinks the New Republic should just leave the Outer Rim alone because he feels like, you know, they're just gotten rid of the Empire and now the New Republic is giving them a hard time. And I just thought it was interesting to think that these Outer Rim systems, as they're called, they don't want Imperial control, but they don't want New Republic control either. They just kind of want to be on their own, doing their own thing. So, yes, some people are just never happy, but I thought that was just an interesting throwaway line, almost in a way, but gave us an idea of sort of their thinking out there, you know?
Right, like local justice.
Yeah, just let us do our thing, you know, we'll take care of it.
I mean, that has been, Cloud City, you know, in Empire was kind of the same way. And it seems like it could be almost maybe a successful model, you know, if they don't have any interference from, you know, some governing, you know, force, that they could just make their money, they could live their lives. Yeah. And
that's actually a really good point. Like all these different places are so different. Can you imagine trying to govern over them all sort of equally when there's just so much variation in the places, might not be that easy.
That makes sense.
Another note, when they first, the scene where Mando jetpacks out on his way to go get the kid, I want to call it a volcano, but he sort of goes up where all the lava is right before it explodes. He comes out the top of it and he shoots two stormtroopers at like super speed as he just flies out of the thing. I thought that was a really cool scene, you know, and something only he could do.
Landing in the superhero kind of pose too at the end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the one knee and the fist.
Right. He's pretty good at that.
Was definitely cool.
Definitely cool. And then the last one is that, you know, when the scout troopers jump on the speeder bikes and they're going down, I thought it was kind of funny and strange that they had two of them crash into each other and not even make it all the way down the hill. And I'm thinking to myself, like, is it just another dig at how useless these Imperial troopers are? Like, they didn't even get off the, you know, they didn't even start the fight.
I thought the same thing.
You know?
I thought that if they were on that base, that those guys had to have made that jump a handful of times. They would know that terrain.
Sure.
And then for them to, like, immediately just go and crash, I mean, it was funny and it was cool, but at the same time, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
I thought it was weird. Like, from a story point, like, why remove enemies like that? Like, I guess there were five of them to start, and now there are only three, but I think it has to have been just another dig at
another
how useless these
incompetence
guys are.
Yeah, thing.
That helps explain why four people can go take a whole base, too.
Yeah.
Right. And there's
a heavily armed base.
Of course. And there's nobody guarding the door, right? You know, like,
right, yeah.
These Imperials, man, it's amazing they ever got anything done. All right. Well, that is it for our discussion of this episode. We'll take a short break, but there's more to come. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. We are going to move straight into this week's block of listener feedback. So here are some responses about this episode from listeners.
All right, Eric Fetten writes, I loved every moment of this episode, with the exception of one very bad line read. This felt like a homage to the OG, Stormtroopers, a trench run, and I know, let's try spinning. That's a neat trick. So much to absorb and so much fun. Dark troopers? Yes, please. Someone pointing out the lack of handrails? About time. A tracking beacon? Love it.
It's all so Star Wars-y. It's amazing.
Yep.
What do you think the bad line read was?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. And I wonder who it came from. Like, I mean, Cara Dune is the least experienced actor, probably. So I wonder, wonder who. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't notice like any glaring mistake, but I don't know if he was talking about maybe content or if it was just, you know, a flub line or something. I didn't notice.
I don't know. Myself. Eric, you'll have to let us know right in next week. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Okay. So the second listener response is from Pac Allen. Very classic Star Wars feel with all the scenes in the Imperial base. The goofy humor was a little too much for me this episode, but I'll appreciate it for what it was. It was great to get Cara Dune and Greef Karga back again being badasses. Even when an episode of The Mandalorian is just okay by Mandalorian standards, it's still an incredible TV show episode.
Totally agree. And I bet you agree
Absolutely.
Too, Rich.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Mark Kirkman writes, I thought it was great to see Cara Dune back. Nice to see the guy Mando caught in season one, episode one, and put in carbonite is paying off his debt. Stormtroopers still don't have any aim when they fire. I liked that they said Mando on these offshoot episodes. Send Mando on these offshoot episodes. Reminds me of my favorite sci-fi show, Buck Rogers in the 25th century with Gil Gerard in the early 80s.
Buck Rogers. Bit. What's up, Buck?
There you go.
You're a fan too, I take it.
Yeah, it was a great show. Megan Brady Wright liked it. Engaging action sequences and some great Baby Yoda. Nice directorial debut for Carl Weathers on this show. It's amazing that Giancarlo Esposito can appear on screen for 60 seconds, and it's automatically one of the standout moments of the episode. The guy exudes so much presence.
He really does.
It's amazing. It really is. I mean, in all the stuff that I've seen him in, I would be curious to see what it would be like to have, you know, to be in a room with him. If he would still have that same kind of energy, right. I have a feeling it would.
Very cool guy. A quick tip here, guys. He was, it might not have been that recently, but I recently listened to an interview with him on Mark Maron's WTF podcast. He was great. He's a really smart guy, really interesting listen. So I recommend that if you want to hear him talk about his life and acting and stuff like that.
Cool.
Next, we have Kirk Manley, the hilarious speeder bike colliding and crashing. Not only can they not aim blasters, they can't drive.
No, they can't
drive. That is, yeah, that is absolutely true.
Brian White writes, that was the Emperor clones in the tank, right? The Razor Crest flying through the clouds kind of looked like a dragon on the wide shots. Are those Dark Troopers at the end? This show just gets better and better.
Yeah,
totally.
There you go.
Totally.
You got my vote for Emperor.
Yep.
Brad Holt says, I thought it looked like Snoke.
Yeah, I think we do too a little bit.
See, Alex Baelish writes, what is it about railing? They can't put them in any reactor in an Imperial base, not on the Death Star, Maldives, and this place, to name a few. No OSHA in this world.
No OSHA, nope. No railings.
OSHA's too expensive.
I guess so, yeah. They got to save cost, right? Barry Evitz, once again, loved this episode. Cara Dune's action sequence at the beginning was fantastic. The Empire's lack of guardrails continues to perplex, and Baby Yoda was cuteness overload this episode.
Yeah, he was. Robert Parker, roller coaster Baby Yoda is the most Disney thing ever, and I loved every second of it.
That's amazing. Like, that's sort of incredible, right? Because it is cute and it's goofy and it's fun, but even us big time Star Wars fans are totally on board with it. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
It looks like, Ryan Reckerly. You know what I love about this show? It's a lot like Indiana Jones. I remember reading an article about Lucas or Spielberg talking about how the opening of each Indy is like you stepping right into his adventure. You don't know what's going on yet, but there's just cool immediate action. Absolutely.
I love immediate action.
Yeah.
All right. Amelie Rochette writes, I really enjoyed this week's episode. I just finished watching. I just love so much how The Mandalorian integrates old aspects of the original movies while having its own genuine identity. The speeder bike chase reminded me of the scene on Endor, but it didn't feel like boring recycling at all. This is definitely one of the key strengths of the show for me. Also, poor Baby Yoda is always hungry and even used the Force to feed himself. Good for him. LOL, hashtag feed Baby Yoda. Thanks for the great podcast, you guys. See you next week.
Funny.
Yeah, that is so true. It's so true that they are able to connect to all the other, you know, properties, yet still kind of have its own identity. I think that is what makes this show so awesome.
It's one of the things I love about it, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Damian Vitale says, this show continues to blow me away with how great it is. I love how they balance the cuteness of the child with the action and lore of the Star Wars universe. Give us a little Yoda to make us laugh, then give us thrilling sequences to remind us it's a sci-fi adventure. Parenting 101, keep kids away from the exposed wires and don't let them eat before they go on thrill rides.
All good lessons, yeah.
There you go. John Bucket, more awesomeness. Love the speeder bikes and TIE fighter chase. The classic shot of the trooper's foot on the pedal. And were those black droids or troopers at the end?
They were something. We're going to have to find out. Finally, Dobolino Bob Grippy, which I think the last time we heard from was Grippy Bob Dobolino, but hey, whatever. come on, baby. Do that magic hand thing. There you go. And we have one call here this week from our friend Steve Brown.
I'm having Among Us PTSD flashbacks with this scene with Baby and Mando. Hey guys, it's Steve. I think it's Richard, Chris, and Eric this week, right? Because Jason's taking some time off. Anyway, I hope I got those right. If I didn't, I apologize. I'm just watching it for the second time, and I wanted to throw something in real quick. And I hope this is not where they're going with this, but I noticed the guy on the little hologram said M count. I hope he's not talking midichlorian count. The first time I watched, I didn't realize that Cara Dune actually told Mando to go ahead and abandon them and jet back to, and they would meet him in town. So basically the rest of the fight in the base is without Mandalorian. There are seriously so many callbacks to the movies in here. Just slight little things that I'm sure you guys are going to talk about them, but I can't wait to hear them. And directed by Carl Weathers to boot. I don't know what else he's directed, but a great episode. I just finished watching it for the second time. And so I know my thoughts are real super random. I love seeing Gina Carano lead that fight scene at the beginning with her and those guys in the bar. That was just great. Or those aliens in the bar. That whole behind the back where she had the guy over her shoulders thing. Oh, man, crazy. Crazy good. Okay, what else is great? So many great things about this show that I'm just getting excited. The second season is really better than the first season. I hate to say that. I don't hate to say it, but I'm just saying it's so rare that we get a show that's better the second season. Okay, I can't wait to hear you guys talk to you later.
Thank you, Steve. Steve's always so enthusiastic. It's great. And it sounded like he had the episode on in the background there for a little bit.
Yeah, right.
But I hate to say it, Steve. I think they were referring to the M word, but called it M count. So maybe you're okay with that. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. That is all the feedback we got this week. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in and Steve for calling. Before we wrap up here, guys, the Lego Star Wars holiday special was recently released on Disney Plus. Did you guys have a chance to watch it? Check it out.
I did. I watched it with my kids and it was pretty fun.
What? Yeah, I watched most of it. Did a little skipping forward here and there because, you know, it was for kids, but it was well done. It wasn't, I think Eric said this earlier, it wasn't as goofy as the original, obviously. And so, you know, it had some adult humor in there too, a couple of places.
Yeah.
Like we saw Han Solo. When they did the whole time traveling thing, Han Solo met Han Solo and they're like, you want to shoot first or should I?
Yeah, they definitely had a lot of little sound bites like that, which were cool. I thought originally that they were going to make more fun of the original holiday special, but I'm wondering if maybe, you know, most people might not even know about that since it was such a weird and crazy thing. But I told my kids, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to make fun of this TV show that came out when, you know, between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. And it was just so goofy, but it was good Lego fun. I mean, Lego always does a pretty good job and it won't disappoint.
Yeah, I agree. I watched it. I thought it was fine. It was entertaining enough, good for the kids.
Right.
And, you know, they just jump through all these different very well-known scenes from all the different Star Wars movies. And it was, I thought it was fun to just kind of watch that. My kids were watching it and they couldn't stop commenting on the quality of the sound-alike voice actors for all the characters. So yeah. They're listening and they're like, that's not Rey, but it's a pretty good imitation of her. And then then it's like Poe and they're like, that doesn't sound like him at all or whatever. And I thought that was a weird thing to focus on, but you know, it's just what they picked up on. But I thought it was fun. I thought it was worth the 40 or 45 minutes or whatever it was to watch. So
yeah,
it was fun. And it hadn't occurred to me that maybe they were going to lampoon the original Christmas special more, but I'm sort of glad they didn't because I think, Eric, you make a good point. I don't think very many people would have picked up on that.
Right. I was a little disappointed that they didn't say Chewbacca's family because his kid is named Lumpy and it's just so goofy and so lame. I was waiting for them to say, and here's his son, Lumpy.
I didn't even know that or remember it. And I would have been like, what? Yeah.
Exactly. That's probably why they didn't do it. But yeah. It was pretty funny.
That actually would have been kind of hilarious. But, you know, anyways, the Lego does do a good job with this stuff. I've played a bunch of the Lego video games, and they're always pretty fun, too. So, you know, I like the Lego stuff.
Yeah.
All solid. Yeah, for sure. My kids play a bunch of those video games, too. And again, from a video game nerd, they're always solid and fun, and the kids love them. So, yeah.
Really quick, I've just recently been playing Jedi Fallen Order, is it called? The game?
Yeah,
did you try that one?
I did.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it is a solid game. You know, it doesn't really bring anything new to the table, but what it does is does it well. And it's fun and yeah, it's definitely a good game.
It struck me as a cross between kind of Tomb Raider and Star Wars in a little bit, because there's a lot of just running, jumping, right, climbing things, you know, solving puzzles.
Puzzles, right.
And then killing stormtroopers and stuff like that, killing bad
guys.
That
never gets old, right?
Never gets old.
That never gets
and,
old.
And you only you ever use a lightsaber, as far as I understand, which is really fun.
Yeah. So,
anyways.
Always awesome.
Just wanted to mention that game, too. It's pretty fun if anyone's looking for a good time on their console. It's probably for PC as well. I don't know.
Yeah, it's on PC. That's what I play it on.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And I actually think there's a sale on EA. It might be on sale.
Yeah, there you go. Pick it up. All right, everyone, that is our show. Thanks for listening. And Eric, thank you for filling in this week and joining us.
No worries. It was a blast. I can't wait to do it again.
It was so great.
Your knowledge is unmatched.
Was that a compliment?
I don't know if that's a compliment or not. Every time I start, you know, talking about some of these goofy things that I know, my wife just kind of looks at me and gives me this weird eye roll, and I ignore it and I continue with it, but there you go.
Yeah, it was a jealous acknowledgement.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
I'm sure it was. All right. Well, if you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
You can check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram at House Podcastica.
And please check out all the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. And you can find my Walking Dead podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Now, could you just do me a favor and plug that red wire in where the blue one was? No! Ah! Podcastica.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.